this fucking guy.
Edit point here.
We did it.
Hi, Carmen.
Hi, friend.
What's up?
Not much. Just ready to tell you a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a little late this week.
Sorry, everyone.
Sorry. We've had some shit going down.
We've had some things.
Yeah. Things have happened.
Some things. But we're still here. We didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. We just, you know, are delayed to your ear holes. And that's okay. Because, again, this is a free podcast.
Let us remind you, as if we don't every week, this is a free podcast for your delight and enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. And to support this free podcast, you can visit patreon.com/thisfuckingguypod and donate us monies so that we can pay for our audio equipment. We can not have to share one microphone.
Yeah.
Because now we're back in separate places. Last week we were together.
Yep. So we have a custody agreement with a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can pay for our show hosting because it's not just free to put this into the world. You have to make it live somewhere on the interwebs, and that costs money.
Sure does.
And, you know, for our time. So do that. You can help us for just $1 a month.
It would be amazing.
You pay more for a beer or a holiday latte at Starbucks.
Yeah, forgo that caramel brulee latte.
Although it is really good.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It's so good.
But
I am mad that they don't have the gingerbread this year.
For real, though?
Yeah, it's my favorite. They didn't even, nobody even was like, oh, we're not doing gingerbread, sorry.
Are you not going to focus group that?
That's like a primary holiday flavor.
For sure. Man, that's a real bummer. However, for the cost of one of those, you could help us do good at podcasting. See, yeah. I can't even say the word.
You can help Carmen get speech therapy.
I need it. I don't know how to say words good. I write them good. I don't say them good.
Yeah. So you can help us out a lot by doing that and by following us on the socials.
Sochmeeds.
Sochmeeds, as the experts would say.
Yeah. And we're experts, right?
Yeah. Because we work in this industry.
Yeah. We work in those things.
Yeah. If you don't know, Carmen and I are writers. Specifically, copywriters, which are the people that do copyright agreements.
No, that would be a lawyer because that is law.
And I've had many people ask me if I do that. And I'm like,
no.
No, and you don't want me to.
You don't want me to be involved in anything like that at all.
Yeah, like I barely passed media law in college.
Yeah, I barely got through ethics, guys. You don't want me involved in this. Let's just be real.
We just write words pretty.
Yeah, we write words good when other people can't write them good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that can't write them good, guys.
True, and a lot of you think you can, but you can't.
You can't.
That's why you should just rely on us to do our jobs.
Pay us monies. We will do it. Mm-hmm. And we'll make it sound so good.
So good. Yeah, you can. If you have words you need written, you can email us at thisfuckingguypod@gmail.com.
Oh, we will tippy type them out so good.
Specifically Carmen, because she is seeking employment again.
Yes, I am. Because my last job was so terrible that I just left it.
Yeah, which was the right choice.
It was the correct choice for my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was horrendous.
Yeah. Carmen cried a lot.
It was awful, gang. But I'm not there anymore.
Yay. And that's just like a nice little, you know, a lesson. Hi, Zara. Hi.
Oh, Z-Pup has joined the podcast, everyone.
a nice little lesson. Like, if you, like, you don't have to stay at a job that you hate. There are other jobs. Just don't, like.
Yeah, just bounce. Don't let a fucking job make you miserable. There's so many other shits you can do. Go get a job at fucking Target and get Target monies.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Get that holiday Target.
Mm-hmm. Go look at that S-Bucks. Get that S-Bucks money. Get them free lattes.
Go work at a doggy daycare.
Yeah. Live your life is what we're saying.
Yes.
And shit jobs are the worst. So if you can fucking bounce, bounce.
And if you're lucky enough to have a shit job where you make a wonderful friend, which is how Carmen and I became friends. We were both in a really awful place that we hated.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was really bad.
It was truly terrible. But we met there.
We met there.
And also fake producer Alex.
Yeah, fake producer Alex and our good friend Judd.
Wait, should we give Judd a fake job?
Ooh, I mean, his real job is just curmudgeon.
Yeah. Is he our fake engineer?
Sure. Judd, you know what? Donate to us on Patreon and tell us what job you want.
Yes. What fake job do you want, Judd?
If you want a fake job on the podcast, you have to donate at least $1 on
Patreon. Yeah. And we will give you a fake job title.
And we'll yell at you occasionally.
Yes. I think that this is only fair.
It is. Alex, you have to give at least like $10.
Yeah, because you already have a fake job, so get on board. Mm-hmm. You're already a part of our fake crew.
Yeah. Okay, so should I go first this week?
Sure. I never remember what order we go in, so I'm just going to always assume that you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just alternate based off of the previous week.
Okay, cool, because I barely know what's going on.
So... Which it seems like it was forever that we recorded, because it was.
Oh, yeah.
God, we recorded the day, like, 30 minutes before you left.
It was literally 30 minutes before I got on a train and went to the airport, and we were very sad and upset.
Cried outside my car at MARTA.
Yeah, we might have done that. We might have made a little bit of a scene, but that's okay.
It's fine. It's just because our love is so strong.
Yeah, and feel your emotions, guys. Don't put your emotions away. Feel them.
Yeah. Feel your feels.
Well, I'm so excited about whatever story you're going to tell me.
This story is wild.
Yes.
And you're going to love this fucking guy.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you about William John Cavendish Scott Bentinck.
Oh, I love him already.
The fifth Duke of Portland, not Oregon, but like Portland, like in England.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Sora's barking. He's really jazzed. He was also known as the Prince of Silence or the Invisible Prince, which sounds very ominous, but it's not.
It does. It sounds like he was not a real person.
No, he was very real. And we'll get to why he was called the Prince of Silence. It's not like he didn't kill anybody. He wasn't like creepy.
Okay, cool. Because that's what we all expect from you.
Oh, I know. This is just this guy. Oh, such a weirdo. Okay, so John Bentinck was born on September 17th, 1800, in London to William, the fourth Duke of Portland, and Henrietta. He was one of nine kids. And went by John because all of the men were named William.
Okay.
I guess John was like one of his confirmation name. I don't fucking know. One of those church things.
I like his independent spirit.
Yes. And also, like, pick a different name for your kids. You don't have to call all of your sons William.
Well, you know, those royals, they got to keep it in the family.
It's so weird.
They just got to keep it in the family.
So he was homeschooled and then joined the army when he turned 18, and he joined the Foot Guards and later the 7th Light Dragoon Guards in 1821. And then he joined the 2nd Life Guards in 1823, but was discharged because he suffered from, quote, lethargy.
Oh, buddy.
I know. He was like, I'm tired.
I don't wanna.
Yeah, I'm good.
Just not feeling it.
So he then became the Marquess. Is it Marquess or Marquess?
I read somewhere in my research about Sweet Baby Henry Cyril that it was Marquois.
Oh, Marquois. But it's not spelled like O-I.
I know. It's not spelled in like a French way.
It's spelled like Quest.
The Marquess Love.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. He became the Marquess or Marquois of Titchfield after his older brother, one of the other Williams, died in 1824. And then he was elected Tory MP, and he held the position until 1826 and gave up the seat to his uncle because he was having health issues. And then he later spent some more time in the military as a captain in the Royal West India Rangers, but on half pay because he was like so sick all the time. So he was just like, I'll take half pay.
Okay, so he's a sickly guy. He's got some military time. He's kicking in Parliament a little bit.
Yeah, and like I don't really know like what he did in Parliament. It didn't like there's not a whole lot of info because the majority of the info about him is like about what we'll get to in a second. So he then left the army officially to just hang out around Europe, and he was dealing with short-term memory loss and sciatica. So he was just like having a rough time. And then his dad died, and I guess he was like next in line. So he became the fifth Duke of Portland on March 27th, 1854. And the position went seat in the House of Lords, which was, I guess, part of Parliament. But he hated speaking so much that it took him 3 years to accept the seat.
Sweet, sweet angel.
He just like didn't want to be around anybody, which I understand.
He was like, I am not feeling this.
Yeah, he's like, no, I don't want to be in front of people talking. Ew. So he was notoriously private, and he was so private, in fact, that he refused to see his doctor like face to face.
Oh my God.
And the only person who was allowed to see him was his personal valet. And during his time, like once he accepted like this seat and everything, he like was able to just become a full-on recluse. And he was in charge of what was called Welbeck Abbey, where he lived. And he wanted to avoid literally every single person that he possibly could. And so he was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to construct some tunnels underneath my property.
He's just very committed. He's very like, committed to his privacy.
And that's cool. Like, he's like, you know what? I'm about that introvert life. I'm building some tunnels so I don't have to go out in public. Goodbye. He hired thousands of employees to build tunnels under his property and earned the name the Workman's Friend. And he had them make like dozens of miles of tunnels. They were glass topped. They were large enough to grow fruit trees inside of.
Whoa.
They were large enough for horses and carriages to walk through.
That's not a tunnel.
No.
That's a straight up. Yeah. That's a straight up subterranean world.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, he wanted all of the tunnels painted pink. So they were painted pink.
Roll with it.
There's like debate about how his employees were treated. Like, for the most part though, he treated them fairly well, and like this boosted the economy. He gave like thousands of people jobs, and this project cost like an insane amount of money. He gave his employees suits, top hats, umbrellas, and donkeys so that they could travel across the tunnels quickly so that they could go build other shit. He also built them a roller rink underground so that they could have some fun.
Oh, yes.
Some employees claimed to have had conversations with him, but others claimed that they never saw him, and he was like this mysterious figure that would just like whisk by.
Yeah, because they've got to be telling other motherfuckers like in the village, like, we just straight up building tunnels.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody knew about this. This estate was fucking huge. So he ordered them to build an underground library, a glass-roofed observatory, a billiards hall. They also built a 10,000 square foot great hall made of clay, which he had a sunset painted on the ceiling and strategically placed skylights. And the great hall didn't need support beams, so it was known as the largest unobstructed floor in England at the time, and it even had a hydraulic lift. It was supposed to be a ballroom for like parties and stuff, but he like never invited anyone over.
Yeah, why would you have a ballroom underground for a recluse?
Right, but he just was building shit underground.
He was just like, yeah, see this big ass fucking mansion? I want you to take the idea of that, put it under the earth.
Yep, that's it. That's the idea. He even tried to create an underground lake, but there were some issues with like the construction of like an underground lake because it's an underground lake.
Yeah, it's a body of water
under the ground. So that failed. So.
Yep. Sure.
I don't know what he would have done with it, but so of course, because of this behavior, people spread wild rumors about why he built so many tunnels and like why he was avoiding every other soul. Some say that he was just very ill or completely mad. Some claimed that he was just like horribly disfigured, a la Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
My favorite rumor is that he held wild orgies in secret.
Ooh, that's even more fun.
None of these are true. He was like a normal looking dude. He was like a little sickly, but not to the point where like some people said he had leprosy. Like he didn't have any contagious disease. Like he just was really reclusive and didn't want to be around people, which is fine.
I get it.
So John kept two letterboxes outside of his bedroom so that he could communicate with notes and so that he could receive food. So like if he had a message, he would just leave it in the outgoing box and then people would write him notes. And that's how he gave his instructions of like what he wanted done.
Wow, he is really committed to his lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. He had doors constructed around his bed so that if anyone except for his valet somehow got into his bedroom, that they wouldn't be able to see if he was sleeping.
That is so fucking awesome. Who fucking thinks of that? That's amazing.
It's like a four-poster bed, but it's just a room. So it's a closet, basically.
I'm really thinking like cubicle walls. Like he's just got cubicle walls all around his bed and it's just like, oh, you don't know if I'm here. Am I not? I don't know.
So he rarely left his rooms, but when he did, it would be through a trap door in his
yes room.
And he would only leave at night. And he would have a lady servant walk 40 yards ahead of him with a lantern through the tunnels.
This is so weird and awesome.
He was so weird. And if he did have to leave during the day to go do like parliament stuff, he would wear two overcoats, gloves, a large top hat, and carry an umbrella so that nobody could see him.
Wow.
He's like, no paparazzi.
He's like MJ.
Yeah.
He's just keeping it real MJ style before MJ.
Yeah.
And without all the weird kid stuff.
Yeah, without all, you know, the child rape.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the biggest tunnels that he had constructed went from his estate to the closest train station so he could go to London without anyone knowing.
That is fucking awesome.
I know. Imagine like having just a direct path from like your house to your public transit.
That would be amazing.
Only you had access to. I think one of the Rockefellers had like a secret subway stop
Yeah, I think that's like a New York urban legend.
Yeah.
Is that there's a disused subway station that was just built for them.
Yeah. Amazing.
There's so much wild shit under New York. Who knows?
Tunnels.
So also, many tunnels.
Also mole people, which I should cover one time because I've seen them.
I don't like that.
I know.
I don't like knowing that's a real thing.
It is a real thing. It's really terrifying. We'll talk about that another time. It's fine.
This guy, though, not a mole person, not just mole really person. Enjoys his anonymity.
Yep. So if for some reason he did have to travel elsewhere by carriage, he had a specially constructed one for that, too.
Of course and he did.
He had like special doors made so that nobody could see in, but he could see out through little spy holes.
Fuck yes. That is awesome. He's like, this carriage could be empty. Who knows?
Oh, and like the spy holes were like he could see out. I guess it was kind of like peepholes in apartments. Like he could see out, but we could see in. Amazing.
Love it.
I know. So he had another very private residence called Harcourt House in London, which I'm not exactly sure why he ended up moving there and residing there, but he resided there until he died in 1879. No one really knows like why he left the main property and like why he abandoned his tunnels, but like the tunnels were built. They were like a big ass project. Like I think some of them you can still go in today.
Holy shit.
Visit this estate.
I want to go there more than anything.
I know. But he allegedly had a daughter, maybe two sons. No one really knows. But like, nobody inherited his estate because he didn't really like have anybody. But years later, after he died, so he died in 1879. In 1897, a woman named Anna Marie Druce claimed that John was actually her father-in-law, a London upholsterer named Thomas Charles Druce, and she said that her father-in-law faked his death in 1864 and then went to live as a reclusive aristocrat, and that her son was the heir to this estate.
That is a lot of dots to connect, but I applaud your effort.
And this kicked off like a whole fucking scandal. So like when John had died, everyone was like, oh, like town weirdo's dead. And they were like all kind of sad. And he was like just a kooky character. And then everyone just kind of like went about their lives. But when this came back into the public eye because of this case, everyone was like, what? Like, this is crazy, like drama. And it led to the grave of the real Thomas Charles Druce's body being excavated to prove that he was like actually dead and like that he was not John. And that like this woman had her husband or something had like another family living in Australia, and like she was trying to get money for her son, and she thought that this was, but I'm like, what a fucking crazy story. Like, oh no, he's actually my father who faked it. Like, this dude was already weird enough. Like, you didn't
need to really piggybacking off that weirdness.
Yeah. So anyway, she was lying. John really did all of this, and he was who he said he was. And but since the case was like so weird, it became like international, and everyone was like, what? This is crazy. And so many more people found out about the tunnels and John. And so it actually became the inspiration for Mr. Badger in The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham.
What?
And if you don't know, Mr. Badger is like the main character in The Wind of the Willows, and he like builds this whole underground world. And I have a quote from Mr. Badger. He tells the mole, people come, they stay for a while, they flourish, they build, and then they go, but we remain. there were Badgers here, I've been told, long before the same city ever came to be, and now there are Badgers here again. We are enduring a lot, and we may move out for a time, but we wait and are patient, and we come back. And so it will ever be.
Aww.
No. He was just a little weirdo who wanted to...
He just wanted to have his tunnel world and just be left alone.
Yeah. And this was just, like, an amazing construction project. Like...
Yeah, that's pretty advanced architecture.
For the 1800s? Absolutely.
Yeah, like fortifying underground tunnels.
With like glass tops and like he built a roller rink underground. What?
I don't understand that whole ballroom thing. How did the ceiling not have to be supported? It was underground.
It had an elevator.
It was under the earth.
Yes.
What?
It was crazy.
What an interesting character, really, really committed to how he wanted to live his life. He's like, I'm tired of motherfuckers. Yeah, I'm done.
So sick of you people. I don't want anything to do with you. And like, this place was massive.
Yeah, like, it's not like he was a poor dude. He already had a whole fucking estate.
Yeah. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to build another one just under.
Pop it right under this bad boy.
Also really, really wide. Like, obviously, horses could walk through. We'll post some of the pictures when we post this episode, but it's...
I mean, cannot wait to do a Google image search on this. So
cool. It is so cool.
I want to go there more than anything.
I know. We should go.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
What a cool dude.
I know.
Oh,
yeah, I can tell you cool, not traumatizing stories.
That's great. That one was really, I was really worried that was going to go a different way.
I know the Prince of Silence sounds very scary, but.
It sounds like a real murdery type of name.
No, and he had like mutton chops and he was just like an old weird dude.
Oh, this is great.
Living his best life.
Just living his best life in his tunnels. I bet that guy right now would have been really into Netflix.
Oh my god, he would have binge watched the shit out of everything. He would love some Great British Baking Show.
Ooh, you know he would. Mm-hmm. He would have been so into streaming. Like, you mean I don't ever have to leave this bitch? Oh, great, let's do it. And Postmates? Ooh.
Yeah. The best about his little like letterboxes, he like loved rotisserie chicken and he would like demand that like he would eat like a whole rotisserie chicken just for lunch. And they would just pop it in his little letterbox and take it. Like, that's
the dream. I love that he was even like, you motherfuckers that work for me, don't want to talk to you either.
Nope. Just put my chicken in my letterbox.
Mm-mm. Put the chicken in the hole. Leave me alone. Don't want to hear it.
Basket.
Put the chicken in the chicken basket that I had someone build that goes to my tunnel.
And be gone.
And then leave me be. Leave me be, servant.
Oh, it's so good.
I really enjoyed this tale.
Yes, you're welcome.
Well, I've got a doozy for you.
Yes.
So, today was Veterans Day. And appropriately, I am going to tell you the story of Louis Zamperini, Olympic long distance runner, World War II vet, and POW camp survivor.
What?
He's a triple threat. He's fucking amazing.
Damn.
So Sweet Louis was born January 26, 1917 in Olean, New York, to Anthony Zamperini and Louise Dosi. They were both natives of northern Italy. So 2 years after Sweet Baby Louis is born, in 1919, they moved the family to Torrance, California. But Sweet Little Baby Louis was bullied when he was a kid because he didn't know English because all he spoke was Italian.
Mm-hmm.
So his dad taught him how to box for self-defense. So, you know, he's like just being a little kid in California, and then he gets to like his teen years and he starts getting involved in a bad crowd and he's smoking and he's drinking and he's getting in trouble and he's acting just like a real little jerk. And his older brother, Pete, is like, hey, homie, you should come run track like me, because it's awesome. And so he does. So all the summer of 1932, which sweet baby Lewis is now 15, he trains so that he can join the track team. So he says, quote, "I had made up my mind to run everywhere. Instead of hitchhiking to the beach 4 miles, I ran to the beach. I'd run from Redondo to Hermosa and back, and then run home at night. All summer long, that's what I did. So I piled up a lot of miles. I had no idea how fast I could run. I had no idea what I was doing to my body."
I don't know if I trust people who run for fun.
It seems just like a lot for your body.
Like, I don't want to run for fun.
I don't either. But Lewis was awesome. So he starts on the track team, and he wins his first cross country race like a badass. And then he was undefeated through his last 3 years of high school. And in 1934, when he is, I guess he would be like a junior, he set the national high school mile record with a time of 4 minutes and 21 seconds, which in his record stood for an incredible, unheard of 20 years. It wasn't challenged for 20 years.
It is crazy.
He ran a mile.
That's so fast.
In 4 minutes and 21 seconds. It was amazing.
That's
also they didn't have like Nikes.
No.
They were wearing like fucking Converse All-Stars back then.
Or like, I don't know, leather shoes.
Their feet were just like wrapped in leather.
Yeah.
Like dress shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. They like ran in dress shoes.
Yeah. It's like they didn't have fucking cool, awesome athletic shoes. This dude was out there stomping the track and fucking, I don't even know what. So he's like being a badass, fucking setting records, winning races, and he gets the attention of USC and they award him a scholarship.
Awesome.
But before that, he's like, I'm going to try out for the Olympics. It's 1936. I'm a senior in high school and I'm going to go try out for the Olympics. Because that's just the kind of guy he is. Why not? So he goes from California to New York to run the 5,000 meter qualifier on Randall's Island on one of the hottest days of the year during the 1936 heat wave. Several competitors collapsed during the race, but not Lewis. He ties for first and is now on his way to the 1936 Olympics in Berlin.
Oh my God.
And having qualified at the age of 19 and 178 days, he remains to this day the youngest 5,000 meter qualifier in history.
What? That's crazy.
This is just numero es uno stop on Louis Zamperini's amazing life.
At 19, I was like blackout in college.
Yeah, I was like, what are we doing on Friday? I wasn't fucking setting records and go to the Olympics. It's amazing.
I don't think I have any records.
No. I don't have any records for my name.
I had one record at camp for juggling the longest amount of time.
That's pretty sick.
But that's it. That's all I got.
That's a pretty sick record, though.
I doubt it still exists.
We don't know that it doesn't. I'm going to still say it's still there.
Okay, it's still there.
Because we don't know that it doesn't.
You're right.
So, Lewis goes to the Olympics. He runs the 5,000 meters. And he was, like, not ready for these motherfuckers at the Olympics. And he's just, like, some poor kid from fucking California. So, he finishes eighth. But, so, he's, like, not judging his time right in the first few laps. And then he starts to, like, figure out the pace that, like, these other guys, they were mainly from Finland, were keeping. And so he's like, I've got to fucking murder this last lap. So he runs his last lap in 56 seconds, sub 1 minute, and has the crowd losing their absolute shit. And it gains the attention of none other than good old Adolf Hitler, because it's the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, and the Nazis are on the way up. Yeah, so that's real troublesome. So he earned a handshake from good old Adolf, who tells him, ah, you were the one with the fastest finish, or the fastest to finish, something like that.
Gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And ever the troublemaker, Lewis tries to swipe a Nazi flag as a souvenir on his way out of Berlin and almost gets shot for doing so.
Yeah, you don't want to...
Tensions were high.
You don't want to steal stuff from murderous Nazis.
No, I think that they didn't know. I mean, it's 36, so they didn't really know what the fuck was going on. Or how bad it was gonna get. Like, they were just like, they got some crazy ideas, this political party. They didn't really know about the whole enslaving people and murdering them thing. Yet. They would find out about that a few shortly years later. So, Lewis and his badassness heads home after the Olympics, starts at USC, and right out the gate sets a national collegiate mile record of 4 minutes and 8 seconds, despite the fact that his competitors had tried to hit him in the shins during the run. And then back then they had like real fucking metal cleats.
Oh my God. So
they had tried to tried to hit him during the race. And so he's like bleeding severely from the shins from the other people in the race trying to sabotage him.
But he's still hurting him.
Yeah, because they're dicks, because they're fucking kids in the 30s and they're assholes. So they're trying to stop him, but he still fucking does it anyways. Finishes a mile in 4 minutes and 8 seconds. So it's a fucking collegiate record, which also held for 15 years.
Jesus Christ.
So at this time in history, a sub 4 minute mile was like, everybody's like, oh, fucking never happened. It was considered completely impossible. But as fucking Lewis and his awesomeness start to gain more of a profile out there in the world, everybody starts to think, Lewis is our man. He's going to do it. He's going to run a sub 4 minute mile in our lifetime. So he's busting ass, fuck training, getting ready for the next Olympics, because his whole race season in 1939, completely undefeated. Fucking amazing. So he's like, I'm getting ready for the Olympics in 1940. Like, just getting it. Training montage, running upstairs, wiping his sweat. Music. Yeah, theme music. Drinking egg yolks. Just getting it. So he's like, I'm getting ready for a fucking Olympics. And then World War II was like, nah, bitch. JK. Just kidding. So the 1940 Olympics are canceled because of the outbreak of World War II.
That's why we can have nice things.
It's, come on, guys. Don't be Nazis. Stop ruining shit. It's very simple. We've said it before. Don't be a dickhead.
Don't be a dickhead.
Alex, put it on a shirt. Alex, I'm going to need you to put that one on a shirt.
Immediately.
Fucking don't be a dickhead. So anyways, ever undeterred, Lewis enlists in the Army Air Corps in 1941 and becomes a bombardier and is deployed to the Pacific. Now, thus starts chapter S dos in the crazy ass life of Lewis Zamperini.
Amazing.
Get ready for it, because you're not ready. So he's like flying missions, doing shit, just fucking being awesome. May 1943, this is like a year and a half after he enlists in the Army. Him and his crew are assigned to go search over the oceans for a lost aircraft and crew. While in the air, searching over the oceans for this lost crew, their plane suffers mechanical failure and they fucking crash.
Oh my God.
It kills almost everyone on board except Lewis and two other men, their pilot and another guy.
Holy shit.
They got no food. They got no water. They're in open ocean. No. All they got is two little BB rafts.
That's my worst nightmare.
Oh. Yes, it is, girl. You better believe on that plane to Hawaii. I was like, I can't fucking look at that tracker. I don't know. Want to know where we are. No. We're just over goddamn open ocean. This is some lost shit. Mm-hmm. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Put me on some goddamn movies. I can't look at this.
And giant squids down there.
Yeah. Let me watch some Toy Story 4 and everybody leave me alone. I don't want to know where we are.
Me
and
in,
I sat in the very middle of the plane. It's one of those big ass planes where there's like two little rows off to the side and then like a row in the middle. Fucking middle. I don't want to see a goddamn window.
Mm-mm.
I don't want to know what's out there. So, Lewis and the two guys that survived, they've got nothing. So they end up fashioning tools from the wreckage. They capture rainwater to drink, and they were able to catch like small fish off the rafts and birds that landed on the rafts, and that was their food.
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, they fucked up some birds.
And they had to eat that like raw, probably.
Yes, they did. So
disgusting.
Also, because they're out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, they're just constantly being beset by sharks. Constantly. And having to like fight them off for their survival. There was even a Japanese bomber that sees them in the open ocean at one point and tries to strafe them and somehow hits no one, just like, I think fucks up one of their rafts, but that like, that's that, that everybody's fine.
What?
So shit is crazy. So one of the airmen, Francis McNamara, ends up dying after they were at sea for 33 days.
33 days?
Yes. So they wrap him up in whatever they can find and toss him overboard. So now it's just Lewis and the pilot, Russell Allen Phillips. So 47, on their 47th day at sea, their raft washes ashore, and they are in the fucking worst place ever to wash ashore, because they wash ashore in a part of Micronesia. So they are instantly taken as POWs.
That sucks.
Yep. Here we go on to chapter 3 of Lewis's crazy ass life. So they're immediately taken by the Japanese. They're taken to this one POW camp, and it's like, whatever, they're just like happy they're not fucking on the open ocean anymore, and like these dudes are relatively cool. And then they're like, we're gonna transfer you, and where we're transferring you is literally called Execution Island.
No.
So they're transferred to this place called Execution Island. They're eventually separated, they're beaten, they're starved, they're tortured. It's real bad. It's real bad news bears. I didn't read a whole lot about this part because I didn't want that in my brain parts.
No.
So I just didn't read it. It's bad news bears. So this all goes on till the end of the war in 1945, because at this point he's now been lost at sea and missing for a year, so the U.S. military has declared him dead. So nobody even knows that him and his pilot. Nope. So they're taken into the POW camp as like unnamed soldiers. Like nobody even knows that they're alive.
Oh my god.
So but they found out, the guys who were, you know, torturers and bad dudes. I don't know what you call them. Terrible people. Torturers and bad dudes. They're not great. They're not great. It's not a good look for them. They find out that he is an Olympic athlete. And so it's probably the only thing that saved him from execution, because they could use him as a propaganda tool. So they tried to like get him on the radio saying disparaging shit about America and like use him to be like
Ian talking bad about.
Right. And like use him to be like, aha, fuck you, America. We've got one of your athletes. So the war ends. In 1945, and Lewis returns home. And at this point, the military, because of all the shit that the Japanese have been putting out, they're like, oh, fuck, he's alive. And not only is he alive, but he's a prisoner of war. So he returns home after the war to like a fucking hero's welcome. Like, everybody's like, fucking Lewis, yes, hell yeah. Super stoked to have you back, bro. And there is a part of the GI Bill that, like, lets former soldiers go for like a month of like rest and relaxation or something like that. And so he takes that and goes to Miami and ends up meeting his future wife, Cynthia Applewhite, in 1946, and they get married. So yay, they kiss and love. They love. But after all his fucking crazy fucked up experiences after being like lost at sea and then tortured for two straight years, he's got crazy PTSD, kind of crazy nightmares, crazy flashbacks. And so he starts drinking very, very heavily. Mm. And he has these crazy nightmares that are really centered on choking out his captors. And at one point, after several years of marriage, wakes up with his hands around Cynthia's throat, and she's like, really? We can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. So this, his wife was like a real big Christian, and she was like real into Billy Graham. And so she's like, boo, you're suffering with some bad shit. Come with me to this sermon. And so he goes, and he said that it reminded him of prayers that he would say while they were stranded on the raft. So he becomes a Christian. He converts because his family was Catholic, and decides to really go on this mission of forgiveness. And so he sought out to forgive his captors.
Oh my God.
In 1950, he returned to Japan for the first time after, since he was released, to forgive a whole crew of Japanese war criminals that were being held at Sugamo Prison in Tokyo. And he said that after that, his nightmares stopped completely. And there was one of his torturers that he was named was Mutsuhiro Watanabe, also known as the Bird, who was like his main torturer, who was like, I didn't hear again, didn't read much about him, but was a straight up psycho, that the Japanese were just like, here, go torture people. We'll get back to him later, because he was missing at this time. No one knew where he was in 1950 when Lewis went back to forgive a bunch of the people that were at this prison. He was in hiding and was one of the top 40 war criminals being sought out by the government. He was number 23. But back to Lewis. Lewis goes on to become a very prominent international speaker. He wrote two memoirs, and his story became the subject of a 2014 film directed by Angelina Jolie called Unbroken, which was that's this dude.
Oh my God.
I know. It's amazing.
I never saw that movie, but I remember seeing the trailer and being like, wow, that looks amazing.
Yes, this dude's life.
Shit.
Yeah, so that is based on a biography. It was written by Laura Hildenbrand. Hildenbrand. I'm going to get that right. So after he becomes a Christian and kind of goes on this big mission of forgiveness, he also founded a camp for troubled youths called Victory Boys Camp that lasted 66 years.
Wow.
It lasted until 2014 and still is being run through like different organizations and like foster homes and different things like that to help out at-risk youths.
Wow.
But this is awesome. So 4 days before his 81st birthday in 1998, he ran a leg of the Olympic torch relay for the Winter Olympics in Nagano in 98. And the leg that he ran was not far from the POW camp where he had been held.
Oh my God.
So while he was there, this dude's 81. He's amazing. He attempted to meet with Mutsuhiro Watanabe, his most brutal torturer, but this fucking coward refused to meet him. Yes, he even gave an interview and would not meet Zamperini. So,
oh my God,
what does the most amazing person I think ever alive next to Beyonce do? He writes this bitch a letter forgiving him anyways.
Oh my God.
And he never gets a reply.
Of course not.
Of course not, because fucking Watanabe calling you out, you're a fucking coward.
Wow.
He is amazing.
I don't even forgive people who, like, cut me off in traffic.
Yeah, they can fuck off and die. He wrote his fucking torturer a letter saying, I forgive you. Amazing. So Zamperini's still getting into his later years. He's still fucking rocking and rolling. He's even attending USC football games into his 90s. He's amazing.
Dang.
But he passes away from pneumonia on July 2nd, 2014, in home at the age of 97. After leading the most fucking incredible life I think I've ever heard.
That's absolutely insane.
Like, just one of those things is real.
One's enough.
He did, like, seven amazing things.
The fact that anybody can run that fast blows my fucking mind. But then, also, you've survived open water for over a month?
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, and then we're captured and a prisoner for 2 years, and then you go on to forgive your captors?
Like, live a normal life? Like,
live an amazing life just helping motherfuckers out? Amazing.
I feel like a very bad person.
It makes me feel like a piece of shit, but it's also like, holy crap, this is like, this is what The Good Place is talking about, you guys. Yes. Sometimes humans can be amazing. This dude's definitely in the best place.
He's in the most best place.
Yeah.
The bestest place.
Yeah. Totally.
That's incredible.
He's an amazing human. He's one of our best.
I want to read that book and the movie and watch the movie.
Yeah, I don't do well with stuff like that.
Oh, the visuals are probably really intense.
Yeah, I don't like having stuff like that in my brain. So, yeah. Oh, it's also rumored that he did run a sub 4-minute mile, but it couldn't be confirmed. So he could have actually broken that record while he was alive, but there wasn't confirmation on it.
Oh my God. That's so fast.
It's so fast. I think it would take me 4 minutes to go around the track once. Let alone, like, many times.
Yeah. At least. I don't run.
No. Who wants to run?
For fun.
I run from danger. And that's it.
Now, I could probably run real fast if I'm being chased.
Yes. You are a tall, lithe person. You, like, could get them legs a-moving.
I ran cross-country for one season because I was forced. And it was horrible.
Ew.
Every second of it. But I was very fast.
Ew. Yeah. Kyle ran cross country and loved it. And I was like, that's disgusting.
People pay money to run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
I don't.
They also run for pleasure.
No.
But then again, I climb tall things for pleasure. So I guess I shouldn't really be judging anybody.
Like, fun. That's a fun activity.
I think it's a fun activity. I think so. Other people probably think I'm crazy.
You just run. Where are you going?
You just keep on going.
Especially if you're running around a track. Literally, yeah. Where are you going?
Yeah, so I have a lot of questions about the track because I don't understand how there's like little lines for people to start because it's curved, but then they can all come together. That seems unfair.
Yeah, because some of it is actually longer.
Thank you.
Right?
I'm not good at, like,
I'm picking that up.
At like, numbers.
If you're closer to the inside, it's shorter.
Thank you.
How is it still the same distance?
I don't know. And it really bothers me because that seems unfair. It seems like stay in your lane.
And like,
have a lane.
Really fast, you get put in a better lane, but you already have the advantage because you're really fast.
You're the fastest.
I don't
know. This is why we don't do sports.
This is why. When I was a cheerleader, we had to run, and I had a knee injury, so I didn't have to run. So I didn't know about this.
Nice.
I was forced.
Not the knee injury, but the not running.
Yeah, I was forced instead to just do push-ups until everyone was done running.
That's not fair. That's a lot of push-ups.
For high school students.
That's not fair. That is not an equal thing.
It's not at all. But definitely not as torturous as being in open water and like held captive by torture. Yeah. That is fucked up.
Yeah.
And also amazing.
Like that your reward for living in a raft for 47 days and surviving is going to a prisoner of war camp.
Like it would have been awesome if he got to do like castaway shit on an island.
Right? Why couldn't they have washed up like
in
somewhere else?
Somewhere that wasn't war torn.
Somewhere that was not openly hostile to Americans.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like I've accomplished nothing in my life.
Oh, same. For sure. We've both managed to somehow not die and make it to this age. So that's an accomplishment.
So.
That's an accomplishment?
Yeah.
Also,
I was in the cold today.
Yeah. Also, we lived in a timeline that encompassed both David Bowie and Beyonce, so that's pretty legit.
You know what? You're right.
That's legit.
And we have Harry Potter.
J.K. Rowling. Let's put her on the list, too. We existed in a timeline that held all three of those individuals. That's pretty rad.
And we have Netflix.
Oh. One of the greatest inventions known to man.
Remember when Netflix used to just be mailing DVDs?
I know. And everybody was like, you're so silly. Your div does. You're so silly. And then they were like, oh yeah, there's some shit on the fucking internet. And then the world was never the same.
It's in the cloud, bitch.
It's in the fuck. The files are in the computer.
In the computer. It's so simple.
It's so simple. The files are in the computer. Oh man. We told some great tales today.
Yeah, these were some good ones. Very uplifting.
I know. Real good one. This is a real winner.
How much do you think it costs to build a tunnel? Probably a lot.
I'm going to ballpark it. I'm going to say a cool mil.
At least.
I feel like a tunnel would cost a mil.
I think all in all, he ended up spending like over 3 million pounds?
So 3 million old-timey pounds?
Timey pounds.
That's a lot of pounds.
So many pounds.
That's so many modern day. If we've learned anything from Henry Cyril Paget, is that old-timey pounds equal a lot of now pounds.
A lot of now pounds.
Like the amount you can't wrap your head around.
You know what would have been cool if Lewis ran tunnels?
Oh.
Just zoom in around those tunnels.
Oh. He should have had a go-kart down there. He had to have.
Probably had a go-kart.
He had to have. That probably wouldn't. Why would you want to walk all that shit?
Liked to be a weirdo underground.
I love it. I'm here for it.
Yeah. I respect that introvert life.
There's got to be some weird millionaire recluse right now that's got a straight up underground city. Surprise. We just don't know about him yet. And that man's name was Elon Musk.
You know that motherfucker has some weird tunnels.
You know he has a subterranean city. You know he does. He has to.
That guy freaks me out.
He shot a car into space. Of course he has a subterranean city. Yeah, just for shits and gigs. And if you don't know what we're talking about, don't Google Elon Musk. He doesn't need the search results.
He doesn't. We should cover him one day, though.
He's a strange little bird.
Yeah. He sure is.
Strange, strange little bird.
Did you have any weird encounters in the past week?
I don't leave my house a whole lot. Because, like we said at the top of the pod, unemployed.
Unemployed.
You're damn right, it's fun employment time. I would say the weirdest thing that's happened to me this week is watching the latest episode of Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. I feel like my tangential encounters with Sam S. Mill's brain really makes me question a lot of things.
Yep. Yep.
I don't understand how he functions as a human with all of those thoughts inside of him.
I would agree with that sentiment. So, listeners, Carmen and I watched 2 weeks, was it 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
2 weeks, or last week's Mr. Robot.
Not the most recent one before that.
Before. We watched together, and it took us like 20 minutes in to realize that the episode was happening in silence.
Mm-hmm.
With no dialogue, except mm-hmm. at the beginning and the very end. And we grabbed onto each other like, what the fuck? And it was very stressful. And then we watched this past one separately, and all of us in our group are like, oh, what is happening?
There is just no brain making pop culture entertainment that is like this human being. There is no one.
This is just, he's amazing.
Which I think we figured out when we tried to describe the show to Nick and could not accurately describe it in a meaningful way.
Nick was like, but I like the show because he doesn't like to feel left out and he wants to enjoy things that I enjoy, which is sweet. And that's why I love him so much. But we were trying to explain why he wouldn't like it because it's not his kind of show. But then we were like, do we even like this show?
And I don't know anymore.
Don't know, because I also don't know what's happening.
Very fair. Me either. But give Mr. Robot a try, guys, if you haven't seen it.
I mean, worth a binge watch.
Oh, for sure.
For in between seasons. So we should have rewatched it, but we didn't.
That's true. I mean, it's on Amazon Prime, guys. Watch it for Rami Malek, if nothing else.
Yeah, Rami Malek is amazing.
But there is no brain operating out there like Mr. Robot. Like, you can't say, oh, you know, it's like this.
It's not like anything you've ever seen.
No.
Crazy
encounters?
I haven't really encountered too many people. Because I also haven't really left my house much except to, like, go to work.
Hey-o! Living that recluse life.
Yeah, building some tunnels. But I do want to talk about something that has brought me joy that you introduced me to when you were here. Tiny Chef.
Oh, gang. Gang.
It is.
Tiny Chef is amazing.
Tiny Chef is the... If you're not following Tiny Chef on Instagram...
You're wasting Instagram.
It is the best. It makes me so happy. I would love to do this fucking guy on Tiny Chef.
Oh my God. Yes.
Oh, ooh, with his little voice.
Tiny Chef is the exact right combination of things that make Instagram amazing.
Yes.
That it's Instagram perfect. Has given rise to this tiny stop motion animated chef.
Tiny Chef with a silly hidden voice.
Oh, God. It's so good. It's so wonderful.
It's the best.
Beloved by Kristen Bell. And now, beloved by this fucking guy.
Sora just shoved his paw under the door.
Oh, like The Shining.
Yeah, yes. I'm moving into Shining.
His head's going to pop through. Like... one of the panels in a minute.
Like a fucking raptor.
Hey, stop.
Unbelievable.
Sora, get your life together. Come on, dude.
I think that means I need to go soon. He's freaking out.
Yeah. Sora, in the words of our somewhat mildly famous podcast, mm-hmm. Be your own fucking guy.
Be your own fucking guy. And with this, we leave you.
See you next time, gang.
Bye.
Bye.